You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Here on a Thursday. My thanks to Angie Morgan for coming on. The website is called leadstar.us and the book is entitled Spark. So, Angie, my thanks to her for coming on. And All Chick Radio continues here. Yeah. Joining me is Jennifer Carrazzo. So, yeah, I got an email like, Mac, what's up? All chicks today. I said, yeah, we get to hear girl voices. It's awesome. So, Jennifer, first of all, thanks for doing this.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
All right. First of all, we need to learn about you. Born and raised where?
Born in New Jersey, raised in Pensacola, Florida, and that's where I met Mario, aka Sugar Bear.
All right. So we have that. So were you going to college? How did you meet?
I was home from college for the summer, and
Where did you go to?
I was going to school at Livingston University in Livingston, Alabama. Very small school.
I guess.
And Mario was
I've never heard of it.
A midshipman at the Naval Academy, and he was in Pensacola at the time for what they call their second class summer.
Right.
And we met at a dive bar.
Nice.
And he asked me to dance.
Nice.
And that was it. We went out the whole week, and he flew back 2 weeks later to Pensacola. That was it. We dated for 5 years, and he got winged. I graduated from college, and we got married.
Wow.
Yeah.
Quite the romance.
We were young. We were young, yes.
What do you mean? How long had you known him at that point?
Well, we dated for 5 years.
What the hell? There's way more irresponsible people than you on the planet.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
No, exactly. But looking back now in retrospect, it's like we looked so young. We were definitely young, but I would not have changed anything. I wouldn't have done it any different way. You know, he was a good guy. He was a good catch, as he used to tell me.
Nice.
Definitely was a good catch.
Oh, he was selling himself?
Yeah, all the time. Anybody that knew Mario, he had the best sense of humor, and he was definitely confident, but confident in a good way.
Right. Wow. All right, so you become a Marine Corps wife what year?
Yes. We were married in 94.
So you're married in 94, and
yes.
And he's a, is he, had he
was,
been had he become a Cobra guy yet, or was he in the process of it?
He'd been winged, and he was going through his training. He was learning to fly the Cobra. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So he's learning to fly the Cobra, and so where do they learn to fly Cobras?
We were in California. He was at Camp Pendleton.
All right. So that's where
which is primarily where most of his career was, between Pendleton and Miramar.
Yeah. So you guys are living the good life.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. We left Pensacola. We came out here. Yes, definitely spoiled.
Exactly.
And so, I was going to your alma mater, University of San Diego, getting my master's while he was at 303.
Now, for those of you who don't know, the University of San Diego is a small Catholic school. And how beautiful is the university? Do you think there's a prettier one in the country?
Oh, it's phenomenal. I mean, and it's just the architecture, everything, just the location. Yeah, definitely. I was definitely spoiled attending school there.
So you got your undergraduate degree in?
My undergrad was in Florida, and I got that in history education, and then my master's was in history.
Really? With an emphasis on what?
Political history, actually. Yeah, yeah. And I helped. I was interning for the mayor of San Diego at the time. And doing prep work.
Who is that?
Susan Golding.
Susan Golding
was the mayor at the time.
Okay,
yeah.
Hold on. Let's slow this down. First of all, San Diego is a pretty corrupt town, isn't it? I'm surprised. Now, I've been elected to public office. I sat on the city council in a town of about 70,000 people. And I don't care what town you're in. There's a group of people that run the town, and then there's a way the town gets run. But I don't know when it was, but it was, I think they were dealing with either the police unions or one of the unions, and they simply would not open the closed meeting up. They wouldn't disclose what was discussed in the meeting, and then they walked out, and then they passed something, and everybody was like, what just happened? And I went, wow. Yeah. So maybe I should rephrase that. San Diego, a very interesting city in terms of local politics, yes?
Yes. Yes, no, I would concur with that, definitely.
Okay, all right. But
it was a good experience. I really good experience for me.
What was the most interesting political aspect of the city? I mean, it has huge labor unions in terms of the port and things like that.
Right.
And so what was the most interesting?
I was doing prep work for the RNC because it was going to be there, San Diego that time. So I was doing all sort of kind of the back stuff for that, doing the prep work for that. So I was learning a lot. I was dealing with public relations. So for me, it wasn't so much the big issues. I was dealing with sort of the day-to-day stuff in the community with, local voters and their concerns and that type of thing and how to deal with them in a public way. So it was enlightening for me. It was a good experience.
All right. So now let's go back to your emphasis on political history. I'm curious, where are we nationally relative to a spectrum of political history?
For me, I would say definitely evolving. I think we're in a new era given the current election and what's going on right now. I mean, I definitely think we're in a period of change. Hopefully this will be a year of positive change. I think it's unique, I think, what's going on right now. I mean, going back to the election, just with what happened recently with the election of President Trump and I think what America is saying they want and they need, I think that was definitely reflected in the election.
Let me ask you, as a political historian, what is America saying it wants?
Change. I think they want change. I think this is the year of the common man and, I think the emphasis is on labor and economics. And I think they want to be heard. And I think that came across in the election. At least that was my take on it, was that, I think what Trump was saying resonated with the common man. And we saw that with the coal miners and the unions and all of that.
All right.
That's my take on it.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a nation divided between urban and rural, big town America, small town America, two very different views of the world. One is very self-supporting and says, I'm responsible for me. The other one says, the government has a large role to play in my life. And I think they don't see the world the same way. So this reconciliation, very interesting. All right.
Yeah.
So you get your master's in history. Let's talk, do you have kids?
We waited 7 years. Murray did a few deployments. I was working, teaching. So we waited, and then we had our son. We did it very planned as usual. Murray was definitely a planner. We were living on base housing. We were saving. And then in 2000, we bought our first home, and a couple months later, I got pregnant with young Mario and went from there.
Right on schedule. Boom, boom,
yes,
boom.
Yes, it was very planned, very planned. Except a few deployments kind of snuck in there we weren't planning for, but as Mario said, the war happened, and just kind of rolled with it.
Right. So the and you have two kids.
Yes.
His first combat deployment is when?
He went to Iraq in 2005.
Okay. Well, let's talk about, because we're going to talk about life as a spouse. What was that like?
It was always, to me, it was always scary. From the night he called me from the academy saying, and I knew he always wanted to be a pilot. That was the goal. The goal was to graduate from the academy and to be a pilot. And I knew that. And I never wanted to stand in this way. I always supported him, but I also always worried. I always worried. So for me, I don't know if it changed so much with the dynamics of what he was doing. I just, as a Marine spouse, you literally learn to just suck it up and deal with it. And especially though with Mario, I mean, That's where he wanted to be. That's what those guys are trained to do. They want to be out there. They want to be in the fight, so to speak. So I learned to put my fear aside and just support him and just really try not to think about it. And just know that he trained hard. He trained well. He was definitely prepared. And you know, pray. You pray a lot. So, but it's stressful. It really is. And not to pat myself on the back, but it definitely takes a special person to be a spouse, to be a Marine spouse, especially with what they're going through these days. So, but it was a great life. We had a great life that he loved, absolutely loved what he did. So you put your fears aside.
I was going to ask you, but you just alluded to it. Your friends that are whose husbands are still flying. If you were nervous before, they have to be. They have to be extremely nervous now, given what seems like one, the number of incidents, two, the spare parts and all, you know, the use of the aircraft.
Exactly, I was going to say.
What do you hear from your friend?
Well, that was more of my fear with him flying. And his friend said this to me after Mario was killed. You know, you don't really expect for them to get shot down. It's more the mishaps. I have more friends whose husbands have died because of mishaps, because of what you're saying, because right. of the conditions of the aircraft and the parts and the funding and all of that. That's more of the concern. That was my concern. I never, you know, would have dreamed in a million years him getting shot down. So that's, you hit the nail on the head with that one. That is definitely a concern. And obviously that plays in again with the politics and the budget and what's going on now and the money they need, to really run these aircraft efficiently and safely.
You don't hear that story, you don't hear a spouse's perspective on that, often. Most of the time, we talk military stuff. Oh, funding,
right.
sequestration, blah, blah, blah. But you don't hear too often, because they're good Marine wives, right?
Right. I mean, I'm not complaining or anything. If anything, I'm just trying to.
No, you should be complaining. Yeah. It's like, well, wait a minute. You know, the job is inherently dangerous enough. You know, are you shitting me? You know, one in four F-18s can get in the air because there's no spare parts, and my husband's being going to get asked to get in this thing.
Well, that's my point. My point is that it's budget concerns, and that these issues need to be eradicated. We need to deal with them, and that's where the issue lies. It lies with the funding and the political system, and that we need to have support for this. I mean, definitely there should be support for this. And I think, you know, just the average guy walking down the street, they don't understand. They don't get it. They might hear these stories on the news, but until you're walking in our shoes and you're seeing what these guys are dealing with every day, it's a different world. It's a different perspective. But that's my, it's the funding issues. That's my point.
Right. Let me read you a quick email. Hey, Mac, tell Jennifer, wish her all the best of luck with her foundation. I just looked it up. Very cool. I think most people think that these stories about going to get spare parts off an aircraft in a museum are either kind of amusing or anecdotal. They're not. They're neither. It's disturbing to think that you're so desperate for parts that you've canvassed the country looking for what's in a museum so that you can go rip a part off it is absolutely an embarrassment to the nation. And I don't know how this has happened. And God bless the women who every day kiss their husband goodbye, and not knowing, you know, if they're going to come home at night. And I know that's part of the life. But
right.
I'm sure they all feel it more now because of the number of incidents that we've had in the Marine Corps and the lack of funding. I think it's pathetic. We all say a prayer for those families and our aviators, and hopefully this thing gets remedied pretty soon. So.
Right. No, exactly.
There you have it. All right. Let's talk about what's it like to lose a spouse? Like, you lost your husband. He was shot down. An RPG hits his hits his aircraft that he's supporting. And you and I were talking yesterday, and you know he wasn't supposed to be flying that much. He was a planner.
He wasn't supposed to be flying at all.
Right.
And I still remember him calling me, telling me, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, honey, you're old. He was a lieutenant colonel at the time, and he had told me he used to always say he did these. Last three deployments, he did two to Iraq, and then obviously the last one to Afghanistan. He did the last three in 4 years, and he would every time he'd leave, he'd say, oh, the worst thing that's going to happen to me is a paper cut. I'm just going to be sitting there, you know, for 6 or 9 months. And but actually, when he told me he was flying, I was thinking, well, it's probably safer to be flying for him. But it's hell on earth. It's absolute hell on earth. I mean, he was my best friend. He was my partner. He was the father to my children. You know, we had a life planned out together. He was hoping to get into politics after the Marine Corps. So, and he had a plan. He always had a plan. It was my worst fear come true. And
now let me ask you about this. How many combat deployments?
That was his third combat. He did 7 altogether, but that was his third combat deployment.
Okay. As a spouse, I've never been one, and I've never even asked anybody this question, so I'll ask you. You and I were talking, and I talked, you know, when you deploy, I think after you've done it for a little bit, you know that there's a certain amount of randomness that you don't control. And so, you know, it's interesting when people say, what's the scariest part of it? And my response quickly, and I think most of my friends say the same thing, it's saying goodbye to your wife and kids because you don't know if you're going to see them again.
You
try not to project that, but ultimately they have the same voice that's in their head, and then you go off. And you do we do our thing, and I think we're all pretty confident that unless something goes catastrophically wrong, you know, that we can handle what we do. But a spouse doesn't go with us. She stays at home and she hears of stories and she knows people. So as a spouse, do you contemplate what would happen?
Interesting. Exactly. I just couldn't help but not. You know, I couldn't help but not. And I'm also a worrier. I've always been a worrier. So I just, you just don't know. And then more so bringing children into the situation.
Right.
That definitely adds a whole new dynamic.
How did that change it?
Because he's responsible now for them too. And I couldn't, like, when he was deployed, he was on the Peleliu going out to the Middle East, and I had my daughter. And that was, we thought we had planned it right, the pregnancy and everything, timing, and then he ended up, the deployment cycle got moved up. And so I was so worried. One of my fears was that what if something happened to him before, you know, he got to meet his daughter. And he met his daughter, our daughter Mila, when she was almost 6 months old. And so it was that typical scenario of him showing up at the hangar and me showing, meet your daughter. You know, she was 6 months old and she hadn't seen her daughter. It was a happy moment then, but having to tell him on the phone, we had a girl, or actually it was a friend of his that emailed him saying, you had a girl, Jen, you know, has a baby, and it was not ideal, but that part of it worked out. I mean, he did have time with our children, so that was good.
Well, no, you know what, but it is, I mean, whenever you come back on the boat, the guys who get off first are the guys who've had, or the girls that have had, well, I guess it couldn't happen to girls, though.
No.
Whoops, got confused. So the guys whose wives have had babies while they've been, it's a tradition, and they're first, and the pictures are obviously very cool. So in your mind, because I think it would be normal to contemplate it. And so kids change it in that, you can't only worry about you. You have, you know, little ones to worry about, and how this incredible event is going to impact them. Does that help? Is that in a way helping you because it's not only about you, or not?
Now it is definitely. And for me, as we talked about this before, but you know, I never wanted, after we lost Mar, after he was killed, I never wanted my children to go, okay, we lost our dad, but then we also lost our mom. So for me, and I had a friend say this to me early on, she's like, your children are going to be such a blessing to you after losing Mario. And at first I was kind of like, I mean, they've always been a blessing and they're the love of my life, but I didn't quite get that. But now I do. I mean, they definitely have kept me moving forward and trying to provide the house, the home that we always had, and that there was laughter and, you know, happiness. And so that's kind of been my goal, is just to maintain what we've had. It's a different life, but to try and kind of keep that consistency of what we had when Mario was here.
email for you, Jen. Mac, I've actually never heard an interview like this. Incredibly interesting stuff. She's obviously a brave woman. I'm curious, just as Marines support each other, when this happened, did she hear from wives who had already lost husbands?
Was that
a help, and could she talk about that? So obviously these people begin women begin to reach out and what try to share their knowledge in a way that's hopefully comforting.
Yes, I was inundated with people, with wives reaching out to me that had lost their husbands, the Marines. Everybody just came right over. So just a ton of support. But yes, but initially I wanted to sort of stay close to my friends that I knew and that knew Mario. So it kind of took me a while to then want to connect with those women. My source of support was just the people that, in our squadron that I knew really well. But then eventually I did sort of break out and I did, connect with other wives. But definitely I had so many people reaching out, people that are still reaching out to help. So it is, it's a good network. Because, you know, you can see, for me, what's always good is the positive stories. When you see these wives that are doing well and that their children have gone on to do well and they're in school and everyone's functioning and, but living life and living a good life, that's been a good, reinforcement for me. So yes, kind of support, definitely.
The, another email. Hey, Mac, want to wish, Jennifer, all the best with her foundation and her family. How have her kids done with all this? Is there a harder age? To manage? Does the way that they look at what happened to them change over the course of time? God bless her. God bless her family. So, Jen, does the event change? Is it dynamic in terms of the way your kids look at it? We lost Jen. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. I'll get Jen back on the phone. My guest this morning from the Sugar Bear Foundation is Jennifer Carrazzo, and we'll continue our conversation with, maybe that's her. Hello?
Yes.
I don't know. That wasn't me. I'm sitting here with both hands on a table, so it wasn't me. All right, so Jen, is this a dynamic event for your family in terms of it changes as your kids age? Have they digested it?
Definitely, I would say. But young Mario is almost 16, and Mila is 13, and I would definitely say around that 12, 13 year age, it definitely hit them in a different light. And so, I've read that, and I've been told that. With, you know, the onset of puberty, it definitely changes things with the hormones and all of that. And so I did see a shift in both of them, kind of a realization that daddy's gone and that daddy died. And, you know, when they were younger, it was more like, oh, daddy's an angel in heaven. And they still, you know, we still talk about him in that sense and that he's watching us. But it's just a more, I think, realistic view of what happened, not so childlike and innocent. And so there's definitely, I would say, kind of a transition around that 12, for us at least, that 12, 13-year-old age, because there's so much going on at that time anyway. So I think this has definitely compounded that with what all they're dealing with.
Interesting. Jen, we're going to take a quick break, and then we come back. We'll transition into how the foundation got started, and then what you guys do, how people can get a hold of you. So my guest today from the Sugar Bear Foundation is Jen Carrazzo. We're going to take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner, proven and dependable.
I'm good, but I have a story and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I still have nightmares.
I'm really not so good. Are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Listen up, employers. Veterans can be a great asset to your company or organization. Veterans have gained skills in leadership, teamwork, and performance under pressure. Veterans have received the very best training in their fields and are never afraid to tackle a tough situation to accomplish the mission. If you are looking to hire a veteran, the Department of Labor can help you make it happen. You hire a veteran today, you won't be sorry.
More than 2 million Americans have served in Iraq and Afghanistan, and the Department of Veterans Affairs reports that approximately 11 to 20% of those warriors may have experienced symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. As we recognize PTSD Awareness Month, Real Warriors Campaign volunteer Meg Mitchum, a former Army combat medic who served in Iraq, encourages fellow warriors to reach out when they need help.
The hardest step was admitting that I needed help coping with PTSD. Once I did, my command and unit fully supported me, and I was able to get the care I needed. Getting support helped me succeed in the military and now in my civilian career.
If you or a loved one is coping with an invisible wound, resources are available and they work. For more information, visit the Real Warriors campaign at realwarriors.net or call 866-966-1020.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer, but I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure out of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there. With folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
8:43 on a Thursday. We're talking, we tend to talk transitions on Thursdays, and certainly talking about one today. My guest from the founder of the Sugar Bear Foundation, and that is Jennifer Crozzo. So, Jennifer, again, thanks for doing this morning. And
thank you.
Thanks for being a friend and retweeting all of our stuff. We appreciate it. let's talk about the foundation. So you and your family are going through this incredible experience of losing your husband. And how does this get on your radar in terms of doing something else?
So sort of slowly after Mario died, I started getting involved with some of the organizations that were supporting us. And kind of looming in the back of my mind, I thought down the road at some point I would want to, you know, start something in his name, but definitely was in the back of my mind. But I got involved with Angels of America's Fallen. And what they do is they support children of the fallen, first responders included, and it doesn't matter how the service member died. But so they sponsor kids' activities, their sports, their dance, you know, art lessons, piano, whatever. And so I got to know the founders really well of the organization and wanted to help them. And so just started trying to reach out to different companies or different people that I thought could help them with funding so that they could sponsor more children. And one night I'm on Facebook and I read this article about Dogtide Brewing. And the founder, Seth Jordan, was a former HeLiG pilot. And I just instantly thought, okay, they might be able to help. Because they were talking about how they assisted Gold Star families and they would honor the service, the lost service member with one of their cans of beer, and then they would donate in that family's name to a specific charity. So I thought, what the heck, shot Seth an email hoping that he would know Mario, and a couple minutes later got an email back, and he's like, I need Sugar Bear, let's talk. And so initially the idea was that we selected Angels of America's Fallen, and they were going to donate a percentage of their profits to Angels. And then last year I decided to host a fundraiser in Sugar Bear's name, Sugar Bear's Barbecue and Beers, and we were going to raise funds for Angels. And the beer was still in the works, and then one day Seth called me and he said, why don't you just start your own foundation and we'll help you? Like, okay. And that was it.
No problem.
Well, you know, sure, what else am I going to do? And I was a little taken back, but I loved the idea. And, you know, I thought, well, I'm raising funds for Angels. Let's just do this for other organizations as well. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. I knew firsthand that there were some great organizations, great foundations out there that were helping Gold Star wives and children. And so I thought, let's just do this. Let's just raise money for these organizations, raise awareness for them, because most people might not know about them and what they're doing, and then just give the money to them. And that's what we're doing. We host events, and we work with a specific charity, a specific foundation that supports survivors, and then we give them the money to help them, you know, keep doing what they're doing so they can focus on the families and what their mission is. And so just it's just been a gift. As I told Seth, they absolutely handed me a gift with this. I love what I'm doing, and in doing it, I like to say that we're continuing Mario's legacy of service, because he was all about taking care of his Marines, taking care of the sailors that he worked with, and their families too. And so this is a way for us to do that. You know, we're continuing the work that he did, and it's just a blessing. I absolutely love what I'm getting to do.
You go down this path, so the purpose of your foundation is to do what?
To raise money for organizations that support surviving spouses and children. We raise money for them. We are a fundraising resource for them.
All right. So you're a fundraising resource. So you make everybody else better.
I like to think so. Yes.
Well, no. I mean, I think that's. It looks to me that like that's it. So. I'm not exactly sure, but how did you arrive on that? Of all the different things you could do, why did that make sense?
Yeah, to me it was a no-brainer. There were so many organizations, and there are so many organizations out there. You know, if you have to be a war widow, to be a war widow in this day and age is pretty nice in the sense that there is support out there. You know, previous generations, previous war widows did not know. I mean, Vietnam, World War II, they did not get the support that we are getting these days. And so I knew there were a lot of good people out there doing good work, but it always comes down to money. So to me, it was a no-brainer. I didn't want to, like, reinvent the wheel. I didn't want to try and initiate any new programs or imitate what somebody else is already doing. I thought, let's just, you know, I knew from talking to these organizations and what they were doing that money is the critical issue to expand or to keep doing what they're doing. So it just seemed, you know, obvious to me. And I thought by hosting these events, you know, we're not only raising money, but we're raising awareness to what they do. You know, the local community might not know about Angels of America's Fall, and they might not know about Folds of Honor. So, you know, if we can raise money and awareness, and in doing so, if we can share Sugar Bear's story and hopefully inspire others with that, it's a good thing. It's a good day.
Okay, so how do you guys go about this? So company or organizations, do they have to be 501c3?
Yes, okay. All vetted. So, yes, they have to be up and running existing nonprofits. Yes, definitely.
Okay, and so they have to be up and running, and then what do? Do they have an event that they want you to help with?
No, we put the event on ourselves. The event on ourselves, and initially it started off with us kind of reaching out to some organizations that I already knew of, but now we're starting to have organizations reach out to us. But we put on the event. Like, we did Sugar Bears Barbecue and Beers. We're working on a couple events now. We'll be sharing event info soon and dates and stuff. But we're working on a pub crawl. We're working on a pancake breakfast. We're working on some other networking type events, kind of happy hour types of scenarios. So we host the event. We come up with the concept. We put it on, and then we just give the money to the organization.
Wow. All right. So if people are interested in getting a hold of you guys, so that you guys can host a fundraising event for them or they can work with you or at least discuss that, how do they get a hold of you guys?
They can either email me directly, you know, go to our site. My email address is Jennifer Carrazzo, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R, Carrazzo, C-A-R-A-Z-O, Jennifer Carrazzo at thesugarbearfoundation.org. And all of our information is on our website. We're on social media. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on LinkedIn. So you can, you know, reach out to me, and you know, we'll go from there.
All right. Is it? I know you're in Southern California. Is it? Do you go around the country doing it? How do you do this?
So right now we are just working here in San Diego. However, as I said, people are starting to reach out. We may be expanding and doing events in other cities. That's starting to come up. So we'll see. We're not opposed to it, and we're just going to see where it goes and how we grow. You know, we are run based off of grants and donations. And so that factors in there as well. But we are starting to get offers or requests to maybe do things in other cities. And so, you know, we're gonna see how that goes. But we're not opposed to it, definitely not.
I got another email. Hey, Mac, I'm curious, and I don't mean to pry into her child raising, but does it help with the kids that this organization exists and that they remember their father this way, or is it something that the kids don't want to be involved in because it brings back up his memory? How do the kids feel about the whole thing? So it's kind of an interesting question. Is it?
Yeah, no, and I can understand both perspectives.
Yeah. Or is it both?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. The kids are interested. They are interested. They're still, it's kind of hard at this point for them. I mean, they're helping some with social media and that component of it, but they're very proud of their father and of what he did. And they have such great memories of, you know, running amok, you know, in Camp Pendleton at his office, the commissary, that sort of thing. So even though they miss him and, you know, it's difficult for them to grow up without him, they they're proud and they're honored to do this. And my son especially, he is starting to come to more events with me. He has an interest in possibly going into the military. We went back. Mario was one of the alumni recognized in November at the Naval Academy, which is where he graduated from school. And young Mario went with me, and he has an interest now in possibly going to school there. So I would say that they're... Yeah. No, I'm for it. I have great memories of our time of Big Mario being at the Naval Academy. It's just such a special place in my heart, and I loved taking Mario back there this past November. So that was wonderful. We're planning to go back.
Did he enjoy it?
He did. He loved it. He absolutely loved it.
Because the rest of us know that those guys are doofuses. They don't know. They don't, so your kid thinks that that's cool. Okay.
He's very much like his father, very smart. Big Mario used to joke that he was a nerd. That was one of the first things he said to my father, was he was a nerd, but he was a good nerd. He did well.
They're like physically fit nerds, and then they put uniforms on them and makes them legit. And it's like, oh, look, everybody thinks we're cool now. But the rest of us know that they're really not. And so then when we all get in one group, we just look at them like, just stop it, okay, please. So, well, that's cool. That's cool. What do you want to communicate about your foundation that I haven't been smart enough to ask you today?
You've been very smart. You've asked all the right
questions. Thank you. You know what? That is such the right answer if you want to come back on, just so you know.
I told you I wanted to go into politics. So, I think just basically what our mission is, because I don't think people might not always understand that we are a fundraising source. That's what I want to try and emphasize, and that it's about raising the money for these organizations, but also awareness. And I think you were touching on this before. It's so important for us to remember these heroes that are giving their life and service to our country, regardless of how the service member was killed. But to remember too that there are families left behind. Our family has received so much support. The Marine Corps has stood by our side. We could not ask for any more help than we've received, but I know that's not always the case for other families. And so just to be mindful that, when we do lose these service members, that there are families left behind. There are wives, there are children. I think to be mindful of that as well and to acknowledge them. And we saw this obviously recently the other night, with the speech with President Trump. And I just thought that was a beautiful moment. And I hopefully we will see more moments like that and to shed some more light on these families and what they encounter after losing a spouse like this.
I will tell you what, I mean, I obviously the most memorable part of the speech was so you and I talked about this yesterday. Somebody who's lost a husband, that must take you right back there to see
it did.
Her aunt.
It was raw.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
It was raw, and it was visible that it was raw. But that was good. It was good for people to see that. And I hope that stays with people because she has to go on now and raise her children. And, I joke sometimes and I say this is a really long deployment that he's doing, but it's every day and it's for the rest of your life. And so it definitely took me back. And the fact that she was there and she mustered the strength and the courage to stand there and do that. And I thought it was beautiful though. I thought it was a beautiful moment and a beautiful moment for our nation to see that.
Well, it is, I tell my kids this, but I think it's good that every once in a while people get their snouts rubbed in it,
mm-hmm.
Otherwise, what was General Pace's comment? The Marine Corps is at war and America's at the mall, And so if the nation doesn't see it, then it, for a lot of people, it doesn't exist, and it does exist, and it doesn't go away. I just had a friend of mine.
Yeah.
There was an incident where a seal drowned off the coast of.
Yeah.
It was off Virginia Beach, and he got caught out in And then the weather changed quickly as he was kayaking in the ocean, and the water temperature was 45 degrees, and the kayak tipped, and he wasn't able to get back in it. But he was able to call home and essentially say goodbye to his wife and kids. The story's brutal. And a friend of mine is his cousin. And so he talked about just this gut-wrenching event, you know, that goes on forever. And I think I think it's important that the nation know about it. And, you know, obviously the other night, I mean, as you said, it was raw to see her repeatedly, you know, looking up, you know, and talking to him, it appeared to me. I don't know what you thought, but
no, that's yeah, it was evident. That's what she was doing. She, you know, was looking to him for support, and she was honoring him. And I just thought it was beautiful. I just, you know, just so much goes out to her, my heart, knowing the road that she's on now and with her children. And, you know, and obviously she's in a haze. I was in a haze that first year. You're just trying to get through each day. And so just knowing what her life is now for her, and it can be good. It's still good, and it will be good. But just that early phase like that is just, it's heart-wrenching, and it's heart-wrenching for me to see that.
Well, you know, you and I were talking about it yesterday. You know, it's almost like it can all, you know, we're talking, it could always be worse. You know, in World War II, you got a telegram brought to your home by the post.
I could not imagine.
Yeah, and then there was, you know, you became a Gold Star mother with a little thing to hang in your window, and that was it.
And that was it, yeah.
And that was it. And it's not that way anymore, which is a good thing.
It's not. No, it's definitely not. Yeah, right. No, we, like,
keep going.
We honestly, and this is another reason why I'm doing the foundation. It's because of the support that we've received from, you know, Mario's, you know, our friends at the squadron and his COs and the COs' wives, and, you know, everyone is still there for us. And so this is a way for me to give back as well, and to say thank you for everything that we've received. And so, and for me, obviously, with the history background and knowing, I've met some widows from the Vietnam era, and it was brutal. I mean, they were not treated well. There was no support. There were no services for them, and more importantly, even for their children. And so you were just cast aside, basically. And that's not been our experience. That's not been our family's experience. So very, very blessed in this day and age, for sure.
All right, Jen. Give the website one more time, and tell people how you if you're interested in working with the Sugar Bear Foundation that operates in the memory of Lieutenant Colonel Mario Carrazzo from the United States Naval Academy. Where was he born and raised?
Here in California. Cerritos. He's local boy, local California boy.
Cerritos. That's a dump, huh?
Yes.
Come on, you know it is. You don't have to say it, but you know
back.
It is.
Don't hold back. No. You really need to get over your shyness.
I know. I'm working through it. I'm working through
he
it.
He loved it. He loved growing up there. He had great friends. He had a good childhood.
Come
he always
on.
Talked
Come
about
on.
That.
Come on.
He
Come on.
Always conveyed that to our children.
We've both been there. Come on. No, that's it. That's kind of a joke that I do. No matter what, you could have said he was from Annapolis, and I would have said that's a dump. And then they look at you like what? And you say, look, I've been to Annapolis. It's a dump. And they're like, at first they get indignant, and then you're like, come on, it's a dump, isn't it? And they're like, and they always agree with you. Yeah, it is a dump.
Not me.
You never agree.
No.
Yeah. Well, then I would ask somebody else that was standing there, and they would have never have been there, but they always said they had. Have you ever been to Cerritos? Yeah. Is it a dump? And I didn't, excuse my language, but I didn't use the word dump. I would say shithole. Like, you know, and this is mostly like in Iraq and Afghanistan. Like, hey, Sergeant, where are you from? Like, or he was looking for me. Are you Major McNamara? Yeah. Who are you? I'm Sergeant, you know. I'm Sergeant Carrazzo. Where are you from, Carrazzo? Cerritos. Cerritos, California? Yeah, that's a shithole. And, you know, they expect you to say something nice about it, like, that's a shithole. And they're like, no, it's not. I'm like, oh, yes, it is. I've been there. It is. Like, well, no, sir, it's not. It's a nice city. Gunny, have you been to Cerritos? Yes, sir, I've been to Cerritos. Is it a shithole? Yes, yes, sir, it's a shithole. And then you're like, yeah, it is kind of a shithole. But it's my hometown. It's, and then they'd say something crazy, like, it's the home of cream of wheat. Like, what? Because every city has some stupid thing like that, right?
It was actually dairy farms.
There you go! And they would say that, and we would just laugh. Oh, my God. A little bit of comedy.
I'm sending all hate mail to you.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, send it to me. It's a joke. Come on. It's funny. Cerritos is beautiful. It's God's country. All right. Jen, we will do this again. Whenever you have an event, we would
certainly
love to pile on and help. And,
that would be great.
And want to wish you, first of all, thanks for coming on and being as open as you've been and sharing your story with us. And just want to compliment you on, obviously, you've made your husband extremely proud by your own conduct in terms of doing something that you know he would love, and also by virtue of you know, the good work you're doing in the community and helping other people. It's very cool. And then I have two sons that are both Marines, so I'm very proud of them. So you never know, young Mario may be in that pipeline.
Exactly.
So we'll keep, I don't know, we'll keep our fingers crossed, but all the best of luck to you and them. And at some point, our paths will cross in the future. I look forward to meeting you.
Yes. Likewise.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, Jennifer. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
There you have it. That is Jennifer Carrazzo, the Sugar Bear Foundation. And, wow. You know, this is a cool, if I haven't said it enough, this is a cool job because you get to meet people like her and people that go through incredible stuff and make you proud that in some way, shape, or form, in some indirect fashion, that you're connected to them. And, you know, and God bless her. God bless their kids. God bless, you know, his service. I remember I was in Afghanistan when that happened, and we were south of where that took place, and yeah, it was not a good day. Anyway, Lieutenant Colonel Mario Carrazzo, a Cobra pilot. So we salute him today, and the work of his wife Jennifer and their great little family. So we're going to take a quick break. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at Battle Mug. You can check out their whole line of products at battlemug.com. They start with a 10-pound block of aluminum, millet machine it, anodize it, and build it into a mug, throw an M16, M4 handle on it, and Picatinny rails, and it's ready for you to throw a scope, a laser, a camera, a light, anything that you could throw on a rail, you could throw on your mug. Perfect for commemorative events, farewells, promotions, retirements, all that good stuff, wedding anniversaries, birthdays, that works as well. Check them out at battlemug.com. Use the promo code Marine for 15% off. It's a veteran-owned and operated company made entirely in the United States. So, again, want to thank Jen Carrazzo for coming on. And had a chance to we exchanged emails yesterday, and just what a delightful person she is, and want to wish her all the best. So we'll take a quick break. I think the Gunner is going to join us next. More of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001.
As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our way of living, our quality of life? The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level. How do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit into business development? And how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.